We are going out live to Lubbock, Texas, where Max Olson of The Athletic joins us live. He is covering the game. Max, appreciate you taking some time today. I'm having a hard time getting a read on this Oklahoma team because I look at them as ranked sixth right now. They seem to have a pretty clear path to the playoff, and they have a Heisman Trophy candidate as their quarterback. And yet they beat Army by a touchdown, and they squeeze by Iowa State. It doesn't seem like they have that same blowout capability that Oklahoma teams normally do, and I'm not sure why with Kyler Murray at the helm.
Yeah, you know, I think losing running back was a huge loss for them. I know a lot of Oklahoma fans felt like, well, they have a couple other backs, and they'll be okay there. But that guy had been really on an incredible run ever since he started Big 12 play last year. Had run for it. It scored 18 total touchdowns in his last 10 games. So losing him for the season, I think it hurts them, and they need to adjust to that. And then, you know, defensively under Mike Stoops, I mean, they're still just, I think they're a little bit better this year, but they're still trying to figure things out. And you saw that against Army where they were put through a very different test and had a hard time there. And that's obviously not the norm in the Big 12. But, you know, I think with Kyler Murray and the offense there, I think they're going to be just fine and be able to score a lot of points. They're going to be able to score a lot of points, but you know, it's going to be a tough run to the Big 12. And obviously, last year they were upset by Iowa State, and they need to be on upset alert every week in this league. That's just kind of how it is.
Obviously, I think the Big 12 might be the deepest league in terms of parity this year. I think even Baylor's much improved. I think 1-9, it's a pretty solid league. It's kind of hard to tell if there's a playoff team though. But are we starting to see some separation at the top, especially if West Virginia goes on and, you know, wins this game comfortably? Are we on a crash course for West Virginia and Oklahoma to play 2 weeks in a row at the end of the year?
I feel like we're heading in that direction. Obviously, TCU has been derailed a little bit here the last 2 weeks, having to play Ohio State and Texas and dropping both of those. You felt like they had a chance to you know, potentially be in that race if they could get, you know, replace the quarterback and kind of get things rolling there. And so they're going through some struggles here. Oklahoma State obviously was exposed last week against Texas Tech, and you know, they've taken a little bit of a step back, as you'd kind of expect without Mason Rudolph and James Washington. And you know, Texas is kind of a nice little run here. We'll see if they can win in Manhattan. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Oklahoma and West Virginia, at least right now, look like the clear two best teams, and they're both pretty healthy on defense, and that's the most important thing for them. And you know, the chance that we could have a snow game in Morgantown between those two and then a repeat the next week in Dallas could be pretty wild.
Talking with Max Olson of The Athletic here on 103.3 FM ESPN. Max, how do we gauge where Texas is right now? Obviously, they've won three games in a row for the first time in a while. I was at the game last week, and I'll admit I'm a TCU alum, so maybe I'm a little biased, but I didn't feel like, you know, Texas was even really that much better last week. They just kind of took advantage of their opportunities. Or is it just a matter of they got to win this week, and then we'll see where they are against OU next week?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're better. I think the fact that, you know, in these last two games, the encouraging thing, I think, for Texas and Tom Herman is they're starting to kind of figure out how to be the physical team that he wants to be. And you watch the second half against USC and TCU, and, you know, they were able to be dominant in the second half. And that's a big change for Texas. They played a ton of games last year that went down to the fourth quarter that came down to, you know, a couple plays or a couple drives. So for them to be able to kind of put things away there in the third quarter and fourth quarter in these games is encouraging progress for them. And K-State, that's a place they haven't won in a long time. That's an important step for them. And then, yeah, Red River has a chance to be, you know, one of our better ones we've seen in the past couple of years. So, you know, I'm not ready to say that Texas is a Big 12 title contender, but they're taking the steps that you want to see. And I think this is probably an 8 or 9 win team that's going to take a step in the right direction in Herman's second year.
What do you anticipate happening at quarterback for Texas? Because it seems like Shane Buechel is moving on after this year. It seems like that's the way the wind is blowing. Do you think they go with one of the talented young freshmen? Do you think Ellinger continues taking steps forward and retains the job for the rest of his career? Or do you think Texas could be in the mix for a transfer quarterback? What do you think they're going to end up doing?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be interested in Kelly Bryant or one of these transfer quarterbacks. I think they're you know, they've made an investment this year in Sam Ellinger that he's going to be the guy, and that they're, you know, I think you've seen progress from him. They really like the two true freshmen they have, Cam Rising from California and Casey Thompson from Oklahoma. They finally have got that quarterback room right where it's competitive, where you're able to redshirt guys, we're able to build up depth there. And that's been the thing that's held Texas back for, you know, throughout this decade, really. So, for the first time, yeah, that quarterback room's in good shape. And I'd agree with you if I were Shane Pichel, you know, probably in his interest to look at a grad transfer after the season. He's still a talented player, and I'm sure that there's going to be some demand for him. But, you know, I think for the first time, Texas has got that quarterback room in a lot better position, and you know, they've got a good commit in Rashawn Johnson for the next class, so and then a commit for the 2020 class, too, at Lake Travis. So they, for the first time in a long time, Texas is, I think, feeling a lot better about their quarterback, you know, depth for the long term here.
All right, Max, I want to shift gears real quickly here. You wrote a good piece for The Athletic this week. Is this the start of the college football's four-and-done era? And basically, you're referring to the redshirt rule, and you kind of centered it around Oklahoma State receiver Jalen McCleskey, who, you know, on paper is their number one receiver. He's a senior player, yet after four games, he is deciding to preserve his senior season and transfer and play elsewhere. What are your thoughts on how this rule is going so far, and where do you think we're going with all of this?
You know, it's interesting. That happened at the beginning of the week, and we didn't really see a lot of these, you know, redshirt and transfer since. So, you know, I think the number of guys that impacted this year was only around, you know, 8 or 12 or something like that. So I don't want to overhype the, you know, what took place this week. But it is pretty surprising, the Jalen McCleskey situation especially, where, you know, that's a guy who was basically like one of their senior leaders, a guy that they brought to Big 12 Media Days and put on the cover of the media guide, and you know, number six in school history and career catches. So definitely an impact player for them, feeling like he wasn't getting the ball enough and deciding to walk away after four games. You know, a surprising move, but I think a sign of the times here that, you know, these coaches, they, for a long time, they fought to get this redshirt rule approved because it gives them a chance to get freshmen in the game. It gives them a chance to have a lot more roster flexibility. And overall, I think it's still a, you know, a positive for the coaching world, but there are going to be some of these special circumstances where four games in, a kid can kind of size up where he's at and decide to make a move. So surprised by that one. That one certainly hurts Oklahoma State. We didn't see a whole lot more of it in the Big 12, but I think we'll see it in the future for sure.
Is there a chance that, and I know that this may be a little bit of an extreme, is there a chance that the 75% of mid-tier Power 5 teams are going to turn into feeder programs for the top 25% teams, where if a freshman at another school has a big year, looks like he's going to be really good, maybe he was under-recruited, then it's going to be a feeding frenzy trying to get that guy to transfer to another school. Do you anticipate anything like that, any situation like that arising at some point?
I don't think so. I mean, we had that same kind of fear-mongering when grad transfers became more common, and you don't see, you know, kids from all over the country transferring to Alabama for their last year. You know what I mean? So it's still going to be used in moderation, I feel like. And I think the thing that has to worry you if you're a coach, though, in addition to kind of managing the expectations with your players and keeping them happy if they're maybe not getting enough touches or whatever in the first couple games, is you would hate to get to this kind of point where coaches are constantly kind of like recruiting guys off of the rosters and, you know, shooting them DMs a couple games in saying, hey, come play for us. You know what I mean? Because I think that's entirely possible. I'm not naive enough to think that doesn't already happen. But you'd hate to see more of that where coaches are having to, you know, either go after kids on other rosters or, you know, try and protect their kids on their team from talking to other people. So that's the kind of stuff when you get into a little bit more of a kind of a free agency situation where you get a little bit nervous about what the future might look like.
All right, Max, I'll leave you on this. Can anybody beat Alabama?
As long as Tua's back there, no, I don't know. I don't think that's I don't know who's going to step up to the ball. I mean, you know, obviously in the playoff, they're going to have, you know, get their best challenges yet. But, and you know, they might get a chance to play Georgia in the SEC title game, I would imagine. But, boy, they got everything they need. For the first time in the Saban era, you're looking at a team that can go out and score, you know, 40, 50 points a game pretty easily. You're seeing it again today. With them being a 50-point favorite, I mean, just where they're at offensively, it's pretty remarkable. And Tua is surrounded by a lot of good weapons at running back and receiver. So no, I don't know who can match up with them on their best day.
One of the few teams that may have a chance, Ohio State, with maybe their biggest test of the year on the road tonight against Penn State. Does Ohio State escape Happy Valley tonight with a win?
I think so. I think Ohio State, what we've seen so far, and obviously the competition level is a little different this week, but they look like a playoff team to me in the way that they took care of TCU there in the second half. And Dwayne Haskins has been off to a terrific start. This is a really interesting challenge for him, a road start in as crazy an environment as you can imagine for a night game. So I'm excited to see how they show up in that one and obviously how they can play without Bosa. But, yeah, I think Ohio State gets it done here and really kind of makes a statement that they're one of the four best.